You're listening to CHSR 97.9 FM. Welcome to This Week in Fredericton, the show that takes a deep dive into the latest news from your community. I'm your host, Zach Roman, and in this week's episode, I sit down for a chat with Dr. Yang Q to discuss an exciting scientific discovery he and other researchers made. Before we hop into the interview, here's a quick bit of background information. A new discovery in plant biology that could advance the production of plant-derived compounds, including some used in vital cancer-fighting drugs, has been made by an associate professor at the University of New Brunswick and collaborators. Dr. Yang Q and his team discovered a new scaffold protein, a protein that physically organizes enzymes for biochemical reactions in plants. This is the first time a scaffold protein has been discovered in the Madagascar periwinkle, a plant that's involved in the creation of chemotherapy drug vinblastine. To learn more, let's chat with Dr. Q about the discovery. I thought we could start, if you could maybe tell me a little bit about when you started down this research path.
I think personally, I started to study this vinblastine and also the big class of compounds, you know, behind this vinblastine, which is cancer drug itself, right? Roughly 12, 13 years ago. So that was a time when I was doing a postdoctoral fellow with Dr. Vincenzo De Luca at Prague University. So Dr. De Luca has been one of the greatest phytochemists and scientists in the so-called plant specialized metabolism in Canada and around the world. So he is actually the pioneer to use this Madagascar periwinkle, which produces the vinblastine, as a system to study the biosynthesis of this very important anti-cancer drug and also the big class compound called the monoterpenoid endoalkaloids. So at that time, when I was working at the Brock with him, so we started to look at the entire biosynthetic pathway that makes this vinblastine, right? So that is the time I started doing this research. But then, you know, at that time, we're more interested in the catalyst or enzyme themselves, you know, that catalyze each chemical reaction in order to get to vinblastine, right? So the completion or near completion of that part of pathway was down around 2018. So that is the time we published a few papers on the biosynthesis of vinblastine. So later on, you know, building on from the research that I did at that time, so I continued with this line of research at University of New Brunswick with my own team since 2019. And we look at many different enzymes along this pathway as well. So the most recent discovery was this scaffold protein that's able to bring several enzymes in the pathway together so that the pathway, the biosynthesis or the reaction itself can proceed a lot more efficiently. So this research started roughly 3 years ago, you know, in Fredericton here. And then we reached out to our collaborators. We together, you know, work on this project until the completion of it.
One of the things that struck me as really interesting, the process from bringing it from plant to medicine, there's up to 30 steps involved. And this research now, what you've discovered, is going to significantly increase the speed and quantity of creating one of the precursors, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. That is very correct. It takes over 30 steps, you know, to go from the simple building block to the final complicated drug vinblastine. So that has been primarily established. But the reason we study this particular pathway is because the vinblastine is a very rare drug that's derived from this plant called Madagascar periwinkle. And it takes roughly 500 kilograms of the dry plant matter of this plant in order to get 1 gram of vinblastine. So you can see that how little the plant makes it, right? What makes it worse is that because this drug itself is so complicated, so far there has been no viable synthetic method, you know, to make it from simple building blocks. So you have the dilemma in here, one that the drug itself is so rare in the natural resource, right? And it's so complicated to make. So this is why scientists spend decades to study how plants actually synthesize this drug. So once you learn how plants can synthesize this drug, right, you can transfer this process into a microbe, for example, yeast, Then you can use the yeast as a chassis to produce this valuable drug. And then, we're hoping that this, the research, not only us, everyone who's involved in doing this, will help patients in need to access this drug because it's just so expensive.
Would it be correct in saying maybe now that you've discovered this, you could use less plants to get the same amount of the drug?
Yeah, that is very possible. I must clarify that the final two steps of making vinblastine has not been completed yet at this moment. However, they are method, they are kind of a semi-synthetic method that uses the two precursors that you can either get from plant or get from this microbial system that's developed very recently, and then you can do semi-synthesis from that moment using these two precursors. So what we demonstrate in this paper is that now with this scaffold protein that we discover from the plant, right? Now we're able to increase the yield or the titer to make these important precursors roughly 1,000-fold higher than the previous report. So you can see that in the previous report, our collaborator has already demonstrated that it's possible. It's possible to synthesize or biosynthesize these precursors in yeast system. But now with nearly 1,000-fold increase in yield, it become closer than ever to push this biosynthesis as a industry-ready reality.
Right. It makes it a lot more feasible as an
Yes.
option as part of the production process.
That is correct, yeah.
Yeah.
And our hope is that if this technology that we developed and discovered here, right, can be further modified and to improve the yield even more than what we demonstrated here, then it become very possible to actually replace the plant production for vinblastine and use the microbial production solely for the final drug.
Oh, wow. Okay. So just to make sure I'm not messing it up, it would be possible to potentially in the future eliminate using the plant entirely?
It is possible, but Zach, there's always going to be I wouldn't say a battle, but I think acquiring the drug from either source will still be viable going forward, right? I don't think necessarily the microbial production can completely replace the use of the plant, because the drug has been historically produced from this plant. So there are industry and processes, to make this happen, and to completely replace that process with a new process, I think it takes time, and also one has to weigh in the cost, between using the microbial system and the plant system. Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong using the plant system. We study plant. I'm a plant biochemist, and we always see plant as a great source for medicines. And in this case, I still believe, there's a great future of using this plant-based system. But microbial-based system could be an alternative. And that will help, to increase the total production of this drug. Yeah,
Yeah.
this is how I see it, how I see that the technology may be developed.
I guess as a plant biochemist, can you maybe speak a little bit to how scientists discover, oh, hey, this flower can be useful for
Yeah.
something? I mean,
Yes,
it
yes,
just
yes,
seems
yeah.
so interesting.
So this goes back to the history of phytochemistry. I think for hundreds of years, or even though going even deeper in the history of humans, right, we realize that there's a medicinal value from the plants in nature, right? And thousands of years ago, and the people have already started to use opium poppy, for example, to treat pain, and together with many other different plant remedies that were discovered. So the development of organic chemistry back in the 18th and 19th century, right? There was great development of organic synthesis, and we start to realize that you can actually get the active component out of the plant source. So there has been a great effort in purifying active compound, separating the metabolites from the plant, and testing each individual fractions or even pure compound over a different set of a disease or the individual cell system. So vinblastine was discovered in 1958 in Canada by two Canadian scientists at the University of Western Ontario at the time. They purified many different compounds from Madagascar periwinkle, and they discovered that vinblastine is able to treat cancer. Basically, it is a chemotherapeutic that's able to stop the cancer cell from dividing. So this is how it's actually used in cancer treatment. So since the discovery in 1958, this drug has been put into clinical use since the 1970s, and has been a very important chemotherapeutic ever since. And it's actually listed as one of the essential medicines by World Health Organization.
It's cool that with such an important history, it also has Canadian history as well.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And also, as I said before, Dr. Vincenzo De Luca from the Brock University has been a major force in decoding the biosynthesis of vinblastine for the past several decades. Yeah, so that is another part of this Canadian connection to this very important drug. Of
Yeah.
course, now UMB has continued this line of research.
I saw there's a collaboration with a number of universities as well. Can you tell me about some of the people and schools that were involved?
So that, as I said, you know, this the research started in here, you know, rooted from the research at Brock University, and then you know, at UMB, we continue this line of quest, and we made an initial discovery of this scaffold protein. And that time, I reached out to two colleagues, one at Zhejiang University, and by the name Dr. Jiazhang Lian, and another scientist is Dr. Yajie Wang from the Westlake University in China. So these two groups have been a very important support for this completion of this project. Dr. Lian's group at the Zhejiang University, and they are the lab focusing on the synthetic biology, meaning using this yeast as a chassis to produce the final drug. So they're biochemical engineers. They're very good at doing, you know, this part of engineering work. And also we have Dr. Wan from the Westlake University, and she studies the mechanics details about how protein functions. So with the expertise of plant biochemistry at my lab and synthetic biology from Zhejiang University and protein engineering and protein chemistry from Westlake, and all three labs work together to decode this unknown layer of regulation in the biosynthesis.
I always find it really interesting how much collaboration is involved in research.
Oh,
and it's so
yeah.
cool that, you know, we can do it across the whole world and work together on making discoveries like this.
Yes, Zach. I think, you know, that's very well said. With the complexity of the research that we're doing today, right, it becomes less possible for an individual group, you know, to complete all the discoveries. And we truly need a collaboration within the nation and internationally, you know, to work together to on a very important topic. So I do see that collaboration is more important than ever, you know, to drive the success of scientific project. And this fundamental science at the same time, I think the investment we made in this fundamental science can lead to this big leap in biotechnology development. So I hope that, you know, general public can appreciate that, you know, the money that we put into the research funding, put into doing fundamental research is necessary to drive a big discovery going forward.
That kind of leads into the next thing I wanted to talk about, was that, like, you're just sharing this research knowledge publicly with everybody. Like, it's kind of open source in a way, in hopes of everybody, let's continue working on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this is a part of this, our mission as a scientist is to discover, you know, make discovery and make sure the discovery benefit the society. This is truly how I see science, the use of usefulness of science in our society. And I hope that the public actually appreciate, you know, what are we doing here? You know, through the talk with you and through the other promotion of our research, I hope that people see that fundamental research is important.
Talked a little bit about kind of showing people why it's so important. Like you said, because there's government grants, right, that help scientists
Yes.
to do research like this. Was there any particular grant that this research was done under or a certain program?
Yes. So my research has been generally supported by NSERC, that is from the federal government. And also, I must mention that the local funding agency, ResearchMB, has been a very important funding partner for my research. So we benefited from direct funding to support students and also research technician and postdoctoral fellow who participated in this research. Without this funding program, it's not possible to do what we're doing here. So I generally, thank our funding agency to make this happen. Yeah.
Was it seven students from UNB that were working with you?
Directly involved in this work, yes.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about the role that they played and maybe what programs they're in and how they all come together to help with the project?
Yes. So the seven students from the lab contributed differently, in different part of the research. Most importantly, our contribution from Scott Mann and Jonathan Garza Garcia. So one, Scott is a master's student in my lab, and Jonathan is a PhD student in my lab. And both of them contributed mostly on the so-called biochemical characterization of this scaffold protein and how this scaffold protein interact with different partners. So this is where their contributions are. And also they characterized the enzymatic details in terms of catalysis in a very detailed biochemical way for these reactions. So the rest of the students, for example, Hannah is a master's student in the lab as well. And she worked on the visualizing some of this protein-protein interactions in the research using fluorescent protein and confocal microscopy. And other students also participated in different ways. For example, Amin Sashovani, he was a master's student in the lab as well. He worked on silencing this particular scaffold implant. So you can imagine that if you downplay a particular branch, biochemical branch in the plant, you're going to see a consequence, biochemical consequence of that. This is how we actually made the initial discovery that this scaffold protein is actually involved in the biosynthesis.
The article you've made, it's published in a journal called Science?
Yes.
And is that anyone can go and read it kind of thing? They can find it online?
So they can find it, the final version just before typesetting of this particular article through BioArchive. So this is the place that is made public available. So everyone could go there and read our research through that channel. Or if anybody is subscribed to the Science magazine, whether through the organization or individually, right? You can also read this this research from there.
Very cool. Not to ask what's next because she just finished a huge project, but just in the sense of, now that this really exciting article has been released, do you think you and your team are going to be kind of continuing along this line of research? What would the next steps look like for you after releasing an article like this?
Yes, a very good question that. So we're interested, in ultimately figuring out every single components for the biosynthesis of vinblastin. So you can see that, once you figure out something that's important for the pathway, right? You can see a big improvement in terms of biotechnology. So we believe there are still missing details and components in the biosynthesis. So the team is still going forward in figuring out, especially the final couple steps that actually will finish the biosynthetic pathway. And also we're looking at potential other regulators in the pathway, just like this scaffold protein, right? There could be other components to bring the pathway in them together to make the biosynthesis more efficiently, yeah.
Is there anything you were hoping to share about the project or the research that I might not have asked you about yet?
If you allow me, I would like to explain a little bit more about how this scaffold protein work.
Of course.
In this entire biosynthesis. So in the past, we usually know that enzymes are the catalyst, that nature's catalyst, right? that perform chemical reactions that convert, let's say, reactant A into reactant B. That is fine. That is good, and it's very important work to figuring this out. So what we discover or here and what this the journal Science and its editor and reviewer find interesting in our work is that now we realize that not only enzymes are directly involved in the catalysis for production of a compound, right? There are other proteins, for example, the scaffold protein, right, that can bring the component together to make this catalysis more efficient. And this line of concept is relatively new to the field we're in. With our research and some other examples from different plant system, right, we realize that it could be very widespread, this kind of scaffold-mediated organization for the biosynthesis. This could exist in a lot more different biosynthetic pathways and in plant system. So once you realize this and then become possible for people to look into, to as a research direction to look into other system, and maybe we can discover more of these type of scaffold protein or important organizers that are actually key to the biosynthesis.
What does the name scaffold protein come from?
It's really function as a scaffold you would you see around the building. So whenever you have some construction, right, you do have this scaffold that holds people, equipment, and the material together, right? So without a scaffold, you can build a building, but I think the construction is going to be rather poor. But with a scaffold, you have an organization. So you have different components lined up together, and you can actually accelerate the construction. So the scaffold protein in the biosynthesis, right, it what we call it interacts with let's say enzyme A and also work interact with enzyme B. So this interaction actually bring enzyme A and B closer in space. Therefore, the intermediate made from enzyme A can be shuttled very quickly to enzyme B without being degraded or lost, because it has to travel through a distance, in the cell, right? So at the same time, what's unique about this particular scaffold, Vinblast, we discover in the system is that it functions as scaffold, but it also increases the catalytic rate of another enzyme it interact with. So this is quite interesting. This is one of the first examples to show that scaffold protein can actually not only bring the enzyme together to make the reaction more efficiently, right? It can physically alter the catalysis rate of another enzyme. So this is what's interesting about this discovery.
I always love learning about why things are named the way they are and learning about comparisons because I think it really helps someone like myself without a scientific background to kind of understand or picture these concepts that we may not be confronted with in everyday life, but are really cool and really interesting to learn about.
Yeah, I feel like this the name scaffold protein actually precisely illustrate what it does. Yeah. Well, I really want to thank you, Nodak, for taking the time talking with me on this our research, and I always find that communicating science, to other people and to general public is not something that scientists you always do, right? And most of the time we focus on our own world, we focus on doing the making the discovery, doing the research themselves, but we don't generally making an effort to communicate with other people. I think it's actually quite important to communicate the discovery, the research we do, to the general public so that people understand, okay, this is this people are actually scientists are doing something really useful for the society. Yeah.
Thanks again for your time and congratulations on the new paper published.
Yeah, thank you so much, Zach.
Thanks for listening to This Week in Fredericton, the show that takes a deep dive into the latest news from your community. We're on the air every Friday from 11:30 a.m. to noon, right here on CHSR 97.9 FM. If you have a news tip, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us by email at news@chsrfm.ca. I'm your host, Zach Roman, and I also do daily news updates for CHSR. Earlier this week, I interviewed Danish hockey player Frederikke Foss, an international recruit to the UNB Reds women's hockey program with world championship experience. In case you missed it, here's the story. International talent is on its way to the University of New Brunswick Reds women's hockey team. Frederikke Foss, who is from Eastern Denmark, is the first international recruit to join Reds women's hockey since the team returned to Atlantic University sport and U Sports play in 2018.
I am 21 years old and I'm from just outside Copenhagen, Denmark, from a town called Gentofte. I have been playing hockey since I was five, so 16 years. I played boys hockey throughout all my childhood until I was 16 when I went to America for the first time. I went to a school in Massachusetts called Worcester Academy for 2 years where I played hockey there, and I played Boston Junior Eagles as well in like the fall season, because the prep school seasons in the US are like only like 2 months long, and then you play like fall hockey and like spring. And then I graduated high school there in 2023. And then after, I committed to the University of Maine in the spring of 2023, but for a start in 2024. So I went to Shattuck St. Mary's in Minnesota for a year and did a post-grad year where I played there. And then I went to the University of Maine in the fall or in the summer of 2024. And that's where I've been since until now, yeah.
Foss brings lots of experience to the team, including from her years on Denmark's national team.
I've been on the U18 team. I've been there since I was 14, but you can play since you're 15. So I played U18 first time in 2020, and then it got canceled in 2021 because of COVID. But I played three championships, I think, or four. Been on the senior national team. I've been to three world championships, one in the top division, where we played in the US in 2024, which was an amazing experience. And like, just playing against the older girls just sets you up like for college, I would say, because they are more experienced, which allows you to like play against these experience and like gain that experience yourself. So I'd say like it gave me like an experience and a little bit of a head start, if you could say, for college, just playing, yeah, against those people and with those people on my team.
Reds head coach Sarah Hilworth said Foss is a highly skilled player with great vision and offensive instincts, and that she's the type of person that's always looking for ways to grow and challenge herself. Foss said she's excited to be coming to UNB this fall.
Experiencing something new and getting to know people in campus, and like I've heard good things about the school and the community, so just like being a part of that, I'd say.
While at UNB, Foss will be studying business management. Thanks again for tuning in to This Week in Fredericton, the show that's dedicated to bringing Fredericton residents news about their community and the people that shape it. Each week's episode is posted in full on our website, chsrfm.ca. I'm Zach Roman, and that was This Week in Fredericton on your community radio station, CHSR 97.9 FM.